Welcome to Paint Ed. PCA provides painting contractors with connections they need to grow their business. To find out more and to become a member, visit pcapainted.org. Find more great content like this on PCA Overdrive. A subscription to the platform is included with membership. For all of you non-members out there, sign up for a free trial. PCA Overdrive is available on the App Store and Google Play. This episode is brought to you by Nice Job, Painter Marketing Pros, and APC.
Welcome to the Painter Marketing Mastermind Podcast, a show created to help painting company owners build a thriving painting business that does well over $1 million in annual revenue. I'm your host, Brandon Pierpont, founder of Painter Marketing Pros and creator of the popular PCA educational series, Learn, Do, Grow, Marketing for Painters. In each episode, I'll be sharing proven tips, strategies, and processes from leading experts in the industry on how they found success in their painting business. We will be interviewing owners of the most successful painting companies in North America and learning from their experiences. In this series titled Ignite Your Passion, Michael Chaney of No Drip Painting will be discussing her journey from part-time hustle to over $2 million painting company, the amazing opportunities she sees for other entrepreneurs to succeed in the painting industry, and the powerful purpose she has developed while scaling No Drip Painting. In episode one, Michael discussed why she got started in the painting industry and what her initial journey looked like as a side hustle. In episode two, Michael laid out the roadmap of how she initially surpassed $1 million in annual revenue. In episode three, this episode, Michael will dive into the path to $2 million and how that is entirely different from her path to $1 million. In episode four, Michael will unveil her powerful why, the purpose she has found since launching No Drip Painting. And in episode five, the final episode, Michael will lay out the very exciting opportunities she sees in the painting industry today. If you want to ask Michael questions related to anything in this podcast series, you can do so in our exclusive Painter Marketing Mastermind podcast forum on Facebook. Just search for Painter Marketing Mastermind podcast forum on Facebook and request to join the group, or type in the URL facebook.com/groups/Painter Marketing Mastermind. Again, that URL is facebook.com/groups/Painter Marketing Mastermind. There you can ask Michael questions directly by tagging her with your question, so you can see how anything discussed here applies to your particular painting company. What's going on, Michael?
Hey, how's it going, Brandon?
It's going great. It's always going great when you and I are shooting a podcast together. So
right.
I'm excited. The path to $2 million, that's not something that's really talked about a whole lot.
No, and they don't tell you about all the gray hair you're going to get on the way.
Surfer strike.
And that's why I have my girl Haley, who is really good with hair color, so she hooks me up. But yeah, I mean, it's a
does Haley work for you? Does she work at No Drip?
No, she's my hairstylist.
Oh, I thought we were getting, okay, got it.
No, Haley's my hairstylist, so I would recommend to have one of those if you're trying to surpass a million, because you're going to get some grays along the way. Yeah. But no, really, you know, we're going to talk about kind of how you have to make a shift, I think, in mindset. Obviously, there's a huge to-do list you need to create for yourself within the business in terms of your processes. And, you know, for me, I think the idea is we're trying to create a foundation that can ultimately be the springboard to, you know, get to 3 and 4 million and 5 million, you know, whatever that looks like. I'm not super hung up on what that number is at this point in time. It's more about building a team that is super proud of what we're doing, a team that really loves this business like I do. And we are tightening up our processes along the way so that we've got this strong foundation.
So where are you guys at revenue-wise right now?
Yeah, so we're at the 2.2, just over that,
okay,
that mark.
And was 2023, was that the first year you surpassed 2 million?
It was. The year before we were at 1.8. And 2023 was our toughest year for many different reasons. But the piece of that puzzle that kept ticking and kept working were some of the processes that we had in place. And just, I think, some of the groundwork that we had laid. Even though we had a difficult year, we had enough structure that we could kind of overcome those things without it really affecting, you know, our sales in the end. our big challenge right now, you know, I'll just tell you, is our cost of labor. So our profits aren't where they are, where we want them to be. We've made some strategic changes in the business to help facilitate better outcome for our cost of labor. And it's proven to work so far. January, we nailed it with a 35% cost of labor, which, you know, is kind of low. Our goal is 40. And we were 18% profitable for the month of January. So we've made some quick, swift changes, and they seem to be working pretty well right now.
Well, that's great. So you guys were 18% net profit in January?
Yeah. And I mean, that's not really my end goal. Of course, we'll take months like that. But, you know, one thing I've learned over, you know, really the last year or so is that obviously profits matter. You want a high profit. Like, why else are we doing this, right? You want to manage all your other numbers so that ultimately you've got high profits. But what I want to do is be strategic on how we use those profits. And, you know, for example, you know, what I'm kind of really focused on right now is, you know, the people that work with me, my team, my core team, I want to pay them well. And I, you know, I want them to have options in life. And this is just something that's on my heart and personal to me. But, you know, I'm willing to pay people a little bit more. I'm willing to give some extras, knowing that in the end, it's going to affect our overall profit. But that's okay, because it's a decision that I'm making, right? Now, obviously, we're going to be profitable. We need to have money in the bank so that we can make strategic decisions for the business. But I'm okay giving up some profit if it means that I'm paying people well and we're taking care of our folks. And, you know, we're doing some really cool things. Like, we have a Paint It Forward program that we really put a lot of time into. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the gist of it. Obviously, you know, you want your profits to be improving. We've got a real focus on that. But yeah, that's kind of where we are.
Yeah, I think the idea that, okay, you're maybe giving up some profit, but you're choosing to, is really big. You know, you said, why else? We want to make money, but we're also doing it for empowerment and the ability to live life on our terms. You're choosing to empower and treat your team really well. That's a decision that you can do because you're running a successful company.
That's right. And when I realized that was part of it, because I'll tell you, the other side of that was me banging my head against the wall, like, man, why are our profits not a bit higher? And then I ended up kind of having the reflection of, wait, they're not higher at this moment. I mean, they're going to be, but they're not higher because we're choosing to do these other things with the money that we make. And there's a lot of power in that. And when you can look at it through that lens, at least for me personally, it actually gets me excited and inspired about the fact that I'm creating this business and I get to choose what I do with that, right? It doesn't matter. My profits can be whatever the heck I want it to be. Yeah. At the end of all this, it's me that needs to feel good about what we're doing. And right now I feel really good about that.
I like that. My problems can be whatever the heck I want them to be. We're all going to have problems, but as business owners, we have the freedom to try to decide what kinds of problems we're going to have.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, when we kind of talk about like the difference for, you know, the one of the biggest differences for me from 1 to 2 million is one, you have to get better at hiring, right? You have to have a team if you're trying to build this foundation. And two, it's required to me for me to. Yeah. So one of the biggest challenges for me has been to learn how to become a better leader, right? Leadership is, to me, is like one of these things that is ever evolving. You can read, you can study, you can, you know, find some mentors, but it's always a work in progress. And, you know, leadership is tough.
Yeah. What do you recommend for people who want to, you know, they're at the million or they're already planning ahead? You know, they know they want to get to multi-millions. Leadership is tough. I think it's one of the hardest skill sets you have to develop it. And it sort of seems soft too. It's kind of, people talk about leadership the way that they talk about culture. And when you're just grinding and starting and trying to make sales and figure out how to meet the deliverables and, until you're at some level of scale, this stuff kind of is abstract. It starts to really matter when you build a team and when you have to really build those systems, and then you start to understand the magnitude of it. How can someone who's never led learn to become an effective leader?
Well, I'm still learning, so I don't know if I'm the best to fully answer that question, but I'll tell you things that I do. One is I listen to a lot of podcasts, right? So I find the people who, in my eyes, are the good leaders and good examples of what I achieve to be. And I follow them, and I read a lot. I've gotten into audiobooks lately. So I do a lot of those. And I put myself around people who I respect and who I can have these conversations with, right? And I think a piece of it for me that I've tried to get better at is just being able to reflect on my own inabilities, I'll say. Like, there's a piece of leadership, and I'll just be open and transparent, a piece of leadership that I'm not the best at, and it has to do with holding people accountable. The truth is that what I've discovered about myself getting to this journey is that what I really am is I'm a visionary. And at some point on my team, the missing piece of the puzzle is having a strong integrator and someone who can kind of fill this void. And we'll get there, right? You don't get it all at once. But so, you know, I've been hit kind of in the face, I'll say, over this last year with some leadership opportunities that have really highlighted some of the areas that I have, that I need some improvement in.
I like that. And the ability to introspect and figure out where you might be weak is not, it can be hard, right? It can be a scary thing to do, to look at yourself and figure out if it's a scary thing. Self-evaluation of any kind, self-reflection, it can feel very critical. It definitely feels critical coming from other people. It can feel critical coming from yourself as well. But unless you do that, it's hard to really build the best company you can if you haven't identified the weaknesses you need help in.
For sure. And I also think that there comes a time when it's okay to not be good at everything. Okay. Like, you know, when I think of even just getting to a million or even to where I am now, it's like, you've got to wear a lot of hats and you've got to try and be the best that you can when all of those hats are on. But the truth is, we all have certain skill sets and we're better at some things than other things. And I think, and again, I say I think because this is still a learning journey here that will forever be. But I think you get to a point where you get to hopefully do the things you're really good at, right? And then you find other folks to take up the slack in the areas that aren't your natural strengths. So that's kind of my focus, is I'm trying to build a team around me that lets me shine, lets me do the things that I'm good at. I put people in positions that let them shine, let them do the things they're good at. And, you know, the result is going to be a pretty amazing business that does super cool things for people.
Right people in the right seats. And that includes you in the right seat.
That's right. And I tell people this, and I don't know if I should continue to say this because some of my women in paint girls, they tell me that this might be a limiting belief that I have. But I think that there will come a day when I have a piece of this business that I'm really good at, but I'm probably not going to be the one running it. I'm probably going to be, figuring out my visionary role and figure out how to get this business to the next level and really extrapolate all of the amazing things that we can do under the name of paint. And someone else, you know, will probably be at the helm of this business. And, we'll see. We'll see if that's a limiting belief or if I'm actually onto something.
Yeah, interesting. Well, that's what Jason Paris did, right, with Paris Painting. And he talks openly about that, about how one of his skill sets is finding people who are better than he is at different things. And that includes leading Paris Painting and then having the humility and the wherewithal to get out of their way.
Yeah, right.
That's a hard thing. I've always thought that sounds really difficult. How many business owners will come
on?
It
is.
We've shot many podcast episodes together and people look to him as this beacon, you know, of what's possible within the residential paint industry. And he stands up there and says, you know, hey, I couldn't lead it like this, so I got out of the way. I don't see other people saying that.
Yeah, well, I think, the reason I can say that, because let me just first say, you know, I was an athlete in my younger days, right? Competitive, you know, I'm going to get the job done. I'm going to, you know, run through the brick wall. And that's one way to do it. But I also think that sometimes business owners are the bottleneck to their business, and they're the ones that are putting the lid on where the business could really go. And because I love this business so much, and because I believe in the potential, I want to make sure that it can flourish in the way that I believe it can in my heart. And I think that means me having a certain role, and probably other people having roles that I can't do. Wow. So it really comes from like this deep love of what we're doing here and what I think we can accomplish.
Yeah, I can see that. You wanting to prioritize the business and the success and needs of the business over maybe what you would want to do.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So and that's a hard thing to do too, because it's hard to separate us as entrepreneurs, separate ourselves from our business in general. So for you to even think that way, it's almost like the way you just talked about that. It's like talking about your child or something, you know, I want to push them off, you know, it's time for them to leave the nest kind of deal.
That's right. So stay tuned. We'll see what happens over the next couple of years.
We'll see. And maybe it's a limiting belief. Maybe it's actually an advanced belief.
Yeah. I think I've kind of started to challenge my girls, and I think they get it now. I actually don't think it's limiting belief. I think it's a intuition piece that I know and I feel, right? And the other thing that I'll say is, you know, kind of the agreement I've made with myself is that if there ever comes a day that I do step away from this business, it won't be when things are difficult, right? It won't be when I'm, you know, maybe losing my mind and I'm worried about cash flow and I'm, you know, under a bunch of stress. It would be a calculated strategic move, because it would be in the best interest of the business. And for me, that gives me a lot of, hope and satisfaction that, you know, it's like when the athlete retires at the top of their game, right? It's like that's when you step away. You don't step away when you're down in the trenches trying to, you know, get all the water out of the trench. You do it when you've really created something amazing and you're proud of it.
It's exactly what I was thinking about too, was the athlete retiring.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So someone's at $1 million, and then when you have $1 million, this hypothetical person.
Yes.
Why is it so different? The 1 to 2, why are you focused so much on leadership right now versus the 0 to 1?
Yeah. So leadership is a piece of it, because now you've got a team, but I think the other piece that people have to be prepared for I think it's relatively, and I'm going to put this in quote, easy, because there's nothing really easy about being an entrepreneur.
It's easy to run and grow a successful business.
No, it's relatively easy to get to $1 million on word of mouth referrals. Okay. Mm. Now you need some repeat clients and things like that. Like part of our repeat client base are our remodelers. They make up about 40% of our business right now. And so that's a good client base. And then the other part of that was, you know, word of mouth referrals. You can do that, but there comes a time when you've got to have different buckets in your marketing category. I think of them like buckets, right? So, you know, we've got your marketing company that helps us generate leads. We've got, you know, we're doing the home show this weekend. This is going to be a great lead source for us. We're expected to get between 50 and 70 leads, you know, scheduled estimates. That's what we're hoping for. You know, we've got our social media that we do our networking. So we've got all these different buckets. And I think when you go from 1 to 2, you've got to have some marketing plans there. You've got to have some things that you do consistently, because you got to have the leads in order to get there. So that jump from 1 to 2, it requires some thoughtfulness on the leads. And then it comes back to, and you and I have talked about this before, but when you get the leads, then can you service them? You know, one of our challenges this year was, once we were getting great leads coming in from our Facebook ads, our marketing efforts, well, guess what? We were getting booked out 4 and 5 weeks for estimates. And you can't do that, right? You can't do that. because there would be times when we choked to the estimate and they'd say, oh, I already had someone do the work. Okay, well, we've got a new plan now, right?
So beautiful. That we can... why do you guys want to repaint this?
So you know, you can get the leads, but then what is your plan to service them and all that good stuff? So it requires some forethought on your processes, your sales process, how you're going to get those leads. And then, I mean, you've got to have a system for production. So I think the biggest piece of the puzzle is I think you can get from 0 to 1 million with not a whole lot of processes in place if you want to, you know, run around and lose your mind every 5 seconds. But to get to that 1 to 2 jump, I mean, you've got to have some systems. And when I say systems, what I mean is, you know, from the very beginning, when someone contacts you, what does their experience look like scheduling an estimate, right? And where does that go? Do you have a scheduling system in place? How does it go from, you know, do you have someone answering the phone? How does that initial contact end up on an estimator's schedule and they show up on time? Those things all have to be thought out, and that occurs at every step of the way. Once it gets into, you know, production, then what? Who's getting the colors? Are you doing color consultations, right? So how are the materials getting ordered? You've got to have some processes in place in order to, you know, complete the job.
Yeah, and that's a big piece that's overlooked a lot, right? When you get effective marketing, whether you develop in-house, whether you partner with an agency that does it well, or however you end up generating that marketing, you have another set of problems. And it's oftentimes a difficult set of problems to solve, which is the operations. And you always are hearing and seeing like, hey, we need more leads. Hey, these leads are bad, right? All over the internet. Those are typically from painting companies that are not that big, because that's the main focus from 0 to 500, 0 to 1 million is really number of leads. You start to actually have to run a company and realize all the moving pieces that go into that at that 1 million and up mark.
Mm-hmm.
What advice do people listening to this who maybe aren't quite there, but they think they're going to be there sooner, they want to be there, and they just don't know how to kind of wrap their minds around this or how to prepare themselves? Are there any steps they can take now to get ready for that 1 to 2 million?
Well, what I think, for some reason, I did a pretty good job at, and I think that this is a result of just how my brain works, is we really documented everything. We do have a lot of SOPs for our business. And, you know, just to make it super basic, SOP is a standard operating procedure, right? One reason I did that early on is because I wanted the business to have value. And to me, if I had all of these things documented, then there's some value, right? I could essentially hand a book to someone and say, here's how you run this business, as opposed to just it all being in my head. I also have kind of this, I don't know if it's a fear or whatnot, but I want this business to out-survive me if possible. And because of that, that's another reason why I documented things. But the flip side of that is that when you document, and what I mean by that, I'll give a real example is, start with, you know, what I just talked about. When your customer calls in, how does a customer schedule an estimate, right? So with my company, there's a couple ways, but they could call us on the phone and someone's going to answer. They could go to our website, schedule that way. They could go to our Facebook, Instagram, which then links to the website, right? That all can be documented. The whole process through which, you know, the customer clicks on the link, they fill out the form, they submit it, that submission gets zapped over to, you know, we use You Can Book Me for that scheduling platform, that gets sent over to our calendar. Those things can be documented. And what happens when you have them documented, you now have a training platform for someone, right? If you need an admin, you can say, okay, let's pull out the SOP. Here's how a customer schedules an estimate. In there, you can have, you know, if you're answering the phone, here's what you say, right? So for me, the documentation of these things, now, again, that's how my brain works. I'm organized in that fashion. And that really gives me something to sink my teeth into. So for me, the message would be to document things and start integrating some systems. I mean, I think when you get to the $2 million market, maybe before, I mean, you might have some, you know, good advice on this, Brandon, but at some point you have to have a CRM. And if you don't know what a CRM, I remember I would hear the word CRM, and I had no idea what that even was, right? But you have to have a place like a CRM where you can store your customer information so that, one, you can use it for future marketing efforts, right? It's basically a collection of the data. You know, the CRM that we use now, which is through you, works really well because, you know, we have a lead come in, we can interact with the customer through this system. You know, you can text them, you can email, you can call them. I mean, there are systems that you're going to have to end up incorporating to, you know, facilitate the really the containment of all of your customer issue. You can't just always do that with an estimating program. And for many years, that's all we had was our estimating program, which we all know in the painting world, there is no one program that does it all, right? There's, you know, you've got to kind of use a couple different programs to complete the mission. But I would say if you're getting to that $2 million mark, it's essential to have a CRM. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, 100%. And so you are using our CRM. So it comes with our marketing program. But what we found, you know, Painter Marketing Pros works only with painters, and we've been doing it for quite a few years now. What we found is there's oftentimes a big discrepancy between marketing and sales that painters don't understand. Right. So it's people come in and then they don't, you ask them, hey, what's your sales process? So this is something we talk with all prospective partners of ours. Hey, what's your sales process? You would be amazed by how many people just don't even understand the question. A lead comes in and we give an estimate and then we follow up. That's your sales process. These are just things that's like, you right. know, you go about your day. Well, I put my pants on, like, okay, you know, we got to start here, but what are you actually doing? Right. There should be like 50 points before you even show up to the estimate. How's that? What's the experience? As you say, what's the experience like? Not just, of course, fundamentally you gave them a number. And of course, then the next step is to see if they pay you the number. Like, obviously these things happen, right? But what it means is there is no sales process. So when you're as a painting company are scaling and you're, you know, you said you can go from 0 to 1 million with repeat and referral 100%. And then you want to start growing and you want to start working with an actual marketer or marketing company or whatnot. And you start generating more leads. You have to have systems and a scalable, repeatable process to handle those leads and close them at a high rate and reach out to past customers and things like that. And a CRM for that is really, really critical.
Yeah. And it's like that in every aspect of the business. I mean, over on the production side, what's your production process, right? You have to be able to answer that question as well. And I mean, I know it's kind of tough in conversations like this to get into all the details. I actually just did I'm going to promote Women in Paint podcast real quick. We just did a podcast and we talked about how we specifically use Slack at No Drip Painting, right? So we can get super, super detailed. So Slack is one of the programs we use and it's part of our production process and how we communicate to our team. We put our work orders in there. Our teams end up putting their invoices in there. Our subs do. So like there's real details that you can sink your teeth into, but the idea is what is the process? And it's detailed. It's, you know, the project goes from here to here to here. You've got to be able to lay all that out and understand it. The other thing is when you start doing that, one, you can discover where the holes are, right? If customers are always calling you or, you know, reaching out like, hey, when are you starting my project? You know, that's a good indicator that maybe you need a process that answers that question before they ask it, right? You know, that's what processes do. And then once you're up and running and you've got some stability under you with these processes, then you can tweak them to better the business. And I'll give you an example of this one here is that job costing is big, right? We know you got a job cost and for some reason, people are very reluctant to do it. And I still don't understand that, but job costing is essential. It's one of the first things I think you should be doing in your business. But we were doing job costing. We've been doing job costing for years. We have lots of data, but my admin was doing it. And we were doing it as an item to check off the list. Did we do job costing for that project? Yes, we were checking off the list. Well, I just mentioned a few moments ago that our biggest struggle for 2023 was our cost of labor. Job costing is directly related to cost of labor, or another way to say that is your job costing can help you monitor your labor costs. So one of the changes that I made was We are now going to have our project manager. I have two project managers. They are in charge of their own job costing, right? It kind of sounds like a no-brainer when I talk about this at this point, but you know, when we're in our busy season, it feels at times like our PMs just are running all over town, checking on projects, making sure customers are good. And that job costing piece of the puzzle was delegated to someone else. Well, I've moved it back to the PM. It's their role. They own it. And it's part of their closeout process, right? So our closeout process in this instance is done at the end of the job. And it includes things like invoicing the customer. We have a whole little thing that we do for customers with touch-up kits, color sheets, cookie cans. We do all these little fun things. That's part of the closeout. And then guess what else is part of the closeout now? Job costing, right? Their job isn't done until they do that job costing. And what that has done is it has given them a bird's eye view of the project the moment it's done. So if there are any issues, if we didn't meet our, you know, our goal is 45% profit on each project, and that's with a 40% labor rate, right? So every project, they're looking at that cost of labor, they're looking at our materials. And from there, we have kind of a system in place. If it's a pricing issue, they go right back to the estimator, give feedback. We can talk about these things in our meeting. But one of the reasons I think we had such a great January and our labor cost was so low is because our PMs knew at the end of that job, they're doing that job costing. And now they're going to have to speak to that because now I'm also following up and we've got a whole system in place. But that's a process. And everyone knows what the process is. And I think, you know, that's really what we're kind of talking about here, whether it's a sales process or whatever it is in your business, you have to have these processes and systems in place, or otherwise you're just operating in some unorganized fashion of some sort.
So the PM's closing out the job, figuring out what the gross margin was on that job, is potentially forcing them to have a higher sense of accountability to doing this correctly. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And right away, guess what the feedback I got was? I love doing this job costing. I thought I didn't have time for it before, but now that we've changed things around and, you know, quite honestly, what I said was, look, we're only doing things under the production umbrella that have a direct impact on our cost of labor. So last year, we spent a lot of time running around to projects, driving all over Columbus, Ohio, going to every project. I said, you know what? We're going to change that. We're still going to have high touch with our customers because that's what our customer requires. But we're going to shift things a bit. And I want you to spend 50% of your time out in the field and 50% of the time in the office. And when I say office, it means just office related work. We kind of have a work from home model, but that means doing your job costing and analyzing what we just did and making sure that materials are ordered ahead of time and delivered to the job. I don't want my PMs running, you know, my PMs are not materials delivery people. We can have Sherwin-Williams do that for free, right? So we've kind of shifted the focus a little bit, and the feedback that I'm immediately given is that this is awesome. I feel like I'm more in control of my job. I feel like I've got, you know, clearer direction on my goals and things like that. So just even making that tweak has been so useful, but I wouldn't have known to even do that if we didn't already have some processes in place. That responsibility, the job costing was in the hands of the wrong person, and we just moved it to the person that that should be, you know, checking that out.
It's a powerful concept. This idea of giving someone control and responsibility of an end-to-end solution here, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. And they like it and they've responded well to it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, people want to feel empowered. You know, mm-hmm. I think some business owners and people in general have this misconception that team members or employees, all they care about is money, and they just want to show up to do their job, and you know, what really motivates them is being paid well and having good hours or the benefits or whatnot. But recognition, appreciation, autonomy, you know, the ability to grow, the ability to have pride in their work. These are really big things.
Oh, gosh.
Bigger things for a lot of people.
The huge. And, you know, the other thing that I have learned is really, really important to my people is to really, I'm going to say, feel my vision for the business, not just, you know, know about it because they hear me talking to someone else, but to really kind of like, you know, allow myself to be vulnerable and open up my heart and say, no, here's what we're doing. You know, we're making a mark, not just in our area, but we're going to make a mark in this industry. And we're going to be known for changing lives through paint and for treating people well. And, you know, all of these things that are on my heart, it has been very important that I really share that and disclose that with them, because that's really what gets them excited. Of course, we all need to make, you know, we need to make livable wages. We need to, I believe in some capacity, I want my people to have some sort of control over what they make, right? Those things are important to give people options in life. But man, you can get people super excited and pumped up if you can get them to buy into your overall mission and goal of what you envision for your business and your team.
Absolutely. And that's the thing a lot of companies don't do very well. It's the thing a lot of companies don't have, really, that, you know, there is no clear, you have a, and I know we're going to dive really heavily into that soon, but you have a very clear vision and mission. And so it makes it something people can rally around. And I wonder for companies that maybe don't have that much passion, I wonder if they can achieve the same efficacy or the same cultural, I guess, benefits that you have at your company without it. It's kind of a rhetorical question. I think it's difficult.
Yeah, I think it is too. I mean, or maybe that's where the challenge comes into play of they need someone that can at least figure out how to communicate it, right? Like not everyone, that's not everyone's strong suit. Like part of what I'm good at is getting people to feel my passion about what I'm doing or what I'm into, right? And so that's something I can lean into and I can utilize that to leverage the business and really get my team excited. That might not be everybody's skill set, but I would say that that's probably a challenge of being a business owner is if you're not the one, the best to communicate that, can you find someone who is, you know? Because you're right. It's not all about what you get paid. There's so much more to it.
You've talked about finding the holes in your processes and I think building processes. This is a reason a lot of companies or entrepreneurs, I think, are hesitant to do it because they think, oh, there's not really a process, or that sounds like really formal or a lot of work, or, you know, we don't really have a process. We just do this. So I'm not going to write that down. But when you start writing things down, even if it seems rudimentary or like you don't have a real process, it kind of builds on itself. It's like a bridge, and you build one part of the bridge, and then boom, the next part appears. It shows you what you need to build. Am I thinking about this the right way?
Yeah, you are. But I think that we have to talk about it under the umbrella or idea that we know that in this industry, things haven't always been super professional, right? It, you know, there hasn't, every time I talk about this, you start smiling. I love it.
You're being so careful. Yeah, everything else you're just going here. You're like, no, we can call a spade. Okay. This industry is behind in terms of professionalization for sure.
Okay. Big time. Right. And so the result of it is we know you get painters who become business owners, and there's a huge learning curve there. It is not the same skill set, right? And maybe you're the painter, maybe you shouldn't even be the business owner. I mean, there's a whole lot we could talk about that. But like, because there's this frame of mind of, oh, I'm just painting, this is a business. Like any successful business has processes, has, you know, strategies, has, you know, ideas and concepts behind what they're doing. And you got to apply that to the painting business too. And when you do, when you think of it as a business and you figure out how to start learning the skill sets of a business owner versus a painter, that's when these things become important. That's when job costing becomes important. That's when writing down your processes becomes important. But to your original question, yeah, I mean, I think it starts with just writing down the simplest thing. And I want to say, I know that seems like a daunting task, and it is. Let's just say what it is, right? There's probably a million things you do in your business, and now we're saying you got to write them all down. Just start small, right? Start with the small things that you know. It's no different. You know, I always tell people, like, you know, I mean, I talk to a lot of people who are just starting, and I've talked to people recently that just write their estimates by hand and give it to the customer and don't have a system or anything. don't really have a way to track who they're doing the work for unless they keep that piece of paper. And I'm like, well, listen, at least put their names in a spreadsheet. Like, those names are going to become valuable to you at some point when you need to reach out and ask for a review, ask for, you know, hey, can you refer me? And that's a process, right? So it doesn't matter how small or how big you are, but you've got to start, getting you need to start understanding that you have processes. My way to do it is to document them. Again, because then that serves as a training document for me at some point. But it also gives me the satisfaction of having something outside of my head. Imagine if you want to sell your business someday. You can't sell it if everything is in your head. So I want my business to have value. And one way to do that is to have documentation of all the things that we do.
Yeah, 100%. You have to have that documented because you have to visualize your company moving on away from you. Or
yes,
Avik talks about turkey truck tests. Or, you know, if you just disappear, if you die, or if something happens to you, what happens to your company? It should be able to continue.
Right.
Or at least the goal should be to work toward that.
Yeah, exactly.
So we've talked about Zapier. You talked about Slack. You weren't talking about Zapier.
Yeah.
You talked
we
about
use Slack.
A CRM, you know, using the CRM we have. We've talked about a lot of the systems and processes. Is there anything else tech related? So in terms of tech products or software that you think people should take a look at?
Well, I'll tell you what we use, and I don't claim to have the best system, and there's certainly things that need to be improved, but for our project management piece, we use Monday.com. It's simpler to Asana and some of the others. One reason I like it is because it's got a good amount of automation that you can add into it. And I don't think you have to be a tech wizard to figure it out, right? So we use Monday. It's totally customizable, meaning I can have it look however I want. And it's flexible enough that I've been able to make it adapt to our processes as opposed to it being stagnant and we have to adapt to the way that it functions. So we use Monday for our project management. We use Zapier. We tie all these things together in some capacity. Well, we currently use Estimate Rocket for our estimating, which Estimate Rocket does have some limitations, but I think that they all do in some way or another. We use Slack. Let's see here. I know I'm missing some views. We use T-Sheets, which is now under the QuickBooks world for folks to clock in and out of. We have a split model of subs and employees. We of course have a payroll company for all of our payroll stuff. And what am I missing here? I know I'm missing something.
That's a pretty good breakdown.
Yeah.
The other thing that you said that I thought was really powerful that I think could be easily missed was you said when customers ask, hey, when is my project going to be scheduled? Or they ask, and you say that for you is a sign or it's an opportunity for improvement. Like, okay, they asked this question. Why didn't they already know it? Or why did they feel the need to ask it? And I think that proactive approach is very rare with businesses. Usually it's, hey, let's wait. And if customer's mad, or if we get a 3-star or 1-star review on Google, well, we know there's a problem, right? Or if some higher ups, or they call and they're very upset, or our closing rate's too low, you know, or we're not making a lot of money, then we have a problem. But you said someone just asked, hey, when is my project scheduled? And for you, that's indicative of a problem. So I think just looking for areas of improvement versus just waiting for fires to happen and then figure out why they happened.
Well, you know what? I think that comes from two places. I used to work in the customer service world years ago. And so there's a little bit of a tie to that. But the other thing is, when I didn't have a project manager, estimator, anybody, I wanted customers to reach out to me as least amount as possible. Like, I was like, I want to minimize the questions, right? And I do this with my team too. Like, I'm going to teach you these tools, these steps, and then therefore you don't have to ask me questions because I'm busy doing other stuff. And I think I've taken that approach with customers, but I've done it in a way because the true intention is to let them have a great experience. And if they're having to reach out to me to find out when their project starts, that means we drop the ball on some sort of communication there. So a lot of the things that that we change or that become highlighted, it's for this exact thing. Like our, you know, our goal is for these customers to have such a great experience that everything they could possibly want to know, we've already answered.
Yeah. Yeah. So we recorded some promotional footage for Painter Marketing Pros recently. And I was talking with this video editing company that we worked with yesterday, and he wanted to wrap up the project and he wanted to know how things went for us. He said, hey, you know, from the beginning to the end, which by the way, is also a good thing for companies to do, sit down and actually talk to people, how the experience was from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Hey, from the experience from beginning to end, how was it? The end product is great. The communication was lacking in the beginning.
Yeah.
And
so,
and part of them is they needed to find a set to record, you know, like where they're actually going to conduct it. And they didn't have that information. And therefore that information wasn't conveyed to me. That's fine. The problem was it wasn't conveyed to me what's happening. And so even if you're trying to get someone on the calendar and you don't know when they need to be on the calendar, or if they're, you're in kind of a holding pattern because you're figuring it out, just simply reaching out to them, having someone give them a call, say, hey, we're really excited for your project. Want to give you a quick update here. And the update is there is no update. You don't say that, but hey, they want to give you a quick update. Our team's really working on getting you in the schedule. We're going to make it as soon as possible. We should let you know by the end of this week. I just wanted to call and touch base with you and let you know. Right. Just
that's right.
I'll let you know that we don't have any information for you, but we're thinking about you. We got you. You don't have to worry. You don't have to follow up and ask us and wonder whether or not we forgot or whether or not we care. That's customer service. You don't always have to have data.
Well, and in order to do that, think about this. There's a couple of things you need in place. One, you need to have on your radar somewhere, somehow, that customer hasn't been contacted, right? Yep. So like that's kind of the handoff from maybe sales to production. That's what we're talking about when we say you need a process. The other thing that I think you have to overcome, or at least I know I did, and this might be really telling about me being a true introvert, is that I would hate to make those phone calls. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't want them to be mad at me. Like, you know, there can be this little sensitivity piece around even making phone calls like that. And I think if you can change your mindset and frame of mind on that and realize actually you're doing them a great service by making the phone call. And most of the time, people appreciate it so much. It's not a case where they're upset that you're not starting tomorrow. It's more, well, thank you so much for letting me know, right?
Yeah. And you run that communication cadence, that almost overly communicating from the very beginning, and people will give you a lot more grace. It's when you kind of climb into your hole and you don't want to call them because, oh boy, like what if they wanted the project to already start? I can't start quite yet. So I'll call them when it's ready.
Yeah.
You're setting yourself up and them up for failure.
But that's a real thing that happens. I mean, I that used to happen with me, you know, when I was the only one doing all the things. I mean, I get how that happens, but I would say get out of that space as quickly as you can.
Yeah. And that's part of the transition from 1 to 2 million.
Yeah, you got it.
Got to build that cultural piece and that communication and the customer experience. So right now we've talked about leadership. We've talked about SOPs, some of the processes. We've also talked about leveraging technology and software to really help make it more scalable. What else are we missing?
I'll tell you a big one is cash flow. Cash flow for me, super tight at the 1 million mark. It seemed like pretty much it took whatever we were making to run the business, right? And I've heard people call the $1 million mark like the dead zone. Like you want to get there and get the heck out of there as fast as you possibly can. So, you know, consider getting a line of credit. You know, consider being really, really good with your money and trying to keep as much as you can in the bank and don't make frivolous purchases. You know, one big measurement for some reason in our industry is, people like to talk about one, how much they make and how many trucks they have. Right. And, sometimes you can get caught up in that and thinking that you might need some vehicles before you do. I know that probably happened to me at one point and I've learned some lessons from it. But you know, cash flow is huge and it's, you need money to run the business. You need money, you know, to pay your people before you collect payments. And, there's got to be a big focus on cash flow. And one reason I say this is because in life, money's probably one of the big stressors for me. And I'm sure there's a lot of
I don't think it's
childhood
anyone else.
Childhood, there's a lot of childhood tiebacks in this, but you know, you got to have money in the bank, and you've got to monitor your money, and that means that you need to know your numbers, right? You know, I know numbers can be scary. It's not something that we all you know, have a knack for, but you got to have your numbers. And you know, for a long time, I did my own books, and when I finally said, you know what, it's worth paying a bookkeeper and an accountant. That is an expense that I think some folks try to prolong paying that, but really it's needed. I mean, I would be very careful going up into the 2 millions and doing your own books unless that is something you have real experience in.
Sure. Yeah. This idea of cash flow, of understanding your numbers, it is oftentimes overlooked or minimized, the importance of it. And the number one rule, in my opinion, of businesses, don't go out of business. And the reason by far the majority of businesses go out of business is that they run out of cash. So it's kind of the number one rule of business is cash flow.
Yeah. Kind of need that, huh? But look, if you're not doing numbers and you're not looking at your P&L, you're operating blindly. And I know that we do that a lot in this business. I mean, it's like the theme to just be operating off of your feelings. And again, I don't know if that stems from this industry just not being professional but like, that's not how businesses run. Businesses know their numbers, and a painting business should know their numbers.
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it oftentimes is generational, or, you know, they have a painting company because they started painting at some point in their lives and then built the company. And a lot of these other industries, it will be, they have a company because they decided to have a company. You know, they didn't necessarily start, you know, selling handbags on the side of the road. And now they own this, you know, store, right? This retail store. They probably, it maybe wasn't that same iteration, or they started as just a one man plumber without any kind of license, just doing random things at people's houses. Now they run a successful plumbing company. They're usually going to start a little bit more intentionally in terms of, hey, I'm going to actually enter this as a business owner and run a business. Whereas painting, I almost feel like a lot of people kind of fall into it, you know, or that they were painting one day, they're a business owner.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know too many people that say, I grew up and I always want to be a painter.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, you're absolutely right. But you know, these are the essential things. If you want to grow your business, you've got to know your numbers. And I think, you know, I'll say one advantage maybe for me, because or it's helped me, because I naturally want to know things, right? Like, I have never been the best at numbers. So you know what? I got an accountant that could also be kind of a coach to me, right? I want to learn this stuff. Now, it doesn't mean that I have to be the one doing it. It doesn't mean that I have to actually figure out QuickBooks, which I hate QuickBooks. But I know how to look at a P&L now, right? But that was a learning curve. There was a time I didn't even know what the heck a P&L was. And now I can look at one and, you know, I know what I'm actually looking at, right? So these are opportunities to learn. And I think that that's a piece of this trying to run a business, being an entrepreneur. You have to want to learn things. It doesn't mean that you have to wear the hat forever, but you know, if you want to be a successful business owner, you've got to understand business related topics.
Yeah, absolutely. And you need to understand the fundamentals of your company, and the profit and loss statement, your income statement, is about as fundamental as it gets.
That's right.
It's a healthy, that's right. That and your balance sheet. But with there usually are not a lot of assets, except I know you were at Women in Paint telling everybody how many trucks you have. So your balance sheet is going to be pretty important.
Okay, don't bust me out on here, Brandon.
I know. I'm just kidding. You only had six. The what, as we wrap up this episode on the crossing that chasm, that path from 1 to 2 million, is there anything else you want to add?
The last that I'm going to say, and this has really been a new venture for me, but is to branch out and connect with people like you, you know, obviously, you know, connect with me. But having the support and be able to even have these conversations. I mean, one reason I like these podcasts, I mean, I'm like you, Brandon, you know, I get to do this Women in Paint podcast. And guess what? It inspires me. It motivates me. I get to ask all the things that I really want to know. But having these connections, these conversations, this is what kind of fuels the fire, right? And, you know, there's some great people out there who are willing to share all the information. There's great podcasts. We know all the amazing things that the PCA offers. And, you know, I would encourage people to get involved because it makes a world of a difference.
Yeah, it really does. Michael, thank you. Thank you for yet another wonderful episode. I'm looking forward to the next two in the series. It's just been great.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it also. This is a lot of fun.
It is.
If you want to learn more about the topics we discussed in this podcast and how you can use them to grow your painting business, visit paintermarketingpros.com/podcast for free training, as well as the ability to schedule a personalized strategy session for your painting company. Again, that URL is paintermarketingpros.com/podcast.
Hey there, painting company owners. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Give us your feedback. Let us know how we did. And also, if you're interested in taking your painting business to the next level, make sure you visit the Painter Marketing Pros website at paintermarketingpros.com to learn more about our services. You can also reach out to me directly by emailing me at brandon@paintermarketingpros.com, and I can give you personalized advice on growing your painting business. Until next time, keep growing.
PaintEd podcasts are produced by the Painting Contractors Association and are made possible by members and industry partners. To find out more about upcoming education opportunities or for more information about joining PCA, visit pcapainted.org.